continuing this journey with Jesus, and we're going to kind of put a kind of a wrap on this series as we head into the next two Sundays, which we have that are next Sunday being Palm Sunday or Lamb Selection Sunday, and then the following being Easter. And so those will be kind of standalones, and I have for us to walk through. But this morning, as we wrap the series, I'm going to introduce you to a friend of ours, and so he's your friend now too, Brian Jackson. He comes to us from Fairhaven. He is the director of high school at Fairhaven, and so he has kind of mastered the high school realm. And I'm like, what it was is like, I just, from a distance, I've admired Brian and got to know him, and he's got such a depth and beauty about his soul, and so I've appreciated conversations and just his heart, and then seeing him with students, but now, like, I'm like, really what he needs is a challenge. And so what he probably needs to do is spend some time with the hooligans at Walker Harbor. So I'm like, Brian, would you come over and hang with us? Because I think Walker Harbor would just embrace you and love you, and I think you would be such a gift to this community. So Brian is going to kind of walk us through the last bit of this series, and I'm thrilled to have him with us this morning, and so you can go ahead and knock these windows out with your cheering for Brian. So thanks for being with us, Brian.
Thank you. Thanks, man. My on? There we are. I don't know about mastered high school. Certainly not true. I'm excited to be with you guys this morning. I apologize. I don't normally sound like this. I'm a little sick. Anybody else got the cold that's going around? Yeah. The rest of you can separate from them. We'll quarantine ourselves. But no, I'm really excited to be here at Walker. I've been to Walker, I think this is like my fourth time. I was with you guys when you were in the gym, and then now here. And the thing I noticed right away is when I walk into Walker, there's this buzz in the room. Like Wally gets up here and talks, and people are too busy back there to come in. And then last time I was here, there was kids in that room, and they did their best to soundproof it, but you can just hear them coming out. And I love the feel of this place. So I'm really excited to be here and talk to you guys. And like Wally said, I'm wrapping up the Lent series, and we're going to be walking closer and closer towards Good Friday and Easter. And so where I want to start, actually, is we're going to go all the way back to Exodus. And there's this story in Exodus that raises what I think is a really interesting and important question that everybody asks at some point in their life. And that question will lead us to talk about this thing called the temple. And then that will, of course, lead us to Jesus on the cross, who asks another really interesting question. And then I want to tell you a story about something that happened to me in India. And it will all make sense, hopefully. So I'm going to start in Exodus chapter 17, and I'll read it, and then we'll go over a few points. That might be a little bit small, so I'll read it out loud. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why do you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." The Lord answered Moses, "Go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders. I think there's one more. And he called the place Massa and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" So to set the scene a little bit, the Israelites are just coming out of slavery in Egypt. For generations and generations, all this group of people had known was slavery in Egypt. And now all of a sudden God raised up this guy named Moses, and Moses frees them, and now they're wandering in the desert. And the first thing we get is all of these stories of them like complaining. Which when I first read it, I was like, why are they complaining? They just got out of slavery. They're experiencing freedom. How could you complain so much? But I think what's going on is they're actually undergoing a major identity crisis. And so something really good has happened to them. They've gone from slavery to freedom. But in Egypt and in slavery, they knew what they were doing, right? They knew when they were going to wake up. They knew how to be slaves. They knew this routine. They knew who they were. And now they find themselves in a better position, but they don't know how to do life this way. They've never experienced freedom before. There's no boundaries. There's no rules. And so they don't have an identity. And so they do what we all do when we experience this type of change, which is we just whine a lot for seemingly no reason. And so Moses is like, God, what do you want me to do with these people? And I know that I've experienced this myself. About halfway through college, I took a year off. And that was a really good thing. I had no idea what I was doing. I was dumping a bunch of money into a major I didn't care about. And so I was like, I need to take a break from this. And that was good, but I moved into this place where I was like, I don't know who I am anymore. I'd never not been a student. And so I had no idea how to do life and not be in school. I was like, what do I do with my time? And I found myself asking God a lot of questions. God, where are you in this? Where are you leading me? God, do you even exist? I went through this long season of doubt. And the Israelites ask a really interesting question. If you could pull up that last slide, I want to focus in on this question that they ask. They said, they tested the Lord saying, is the Lord among us or not? I think this is one of those big questions. I think this is one of those questions that we've all either asked or we will ask at some point. And it can come in a lot of forms. It can come, is the Lord among us or not? Or, you know, where are you, God, in this? Where are you leading us, God? Are you even here or are you somewhere else? How could you let this happen, right? It's one of those big questions. And what I want to do is I want to track this question through Israel's history a little bit. And so in this moment, in this story, they ask the question, and where God is located is that where the Mount Horeb, or the other name for it is Mount Sinai. So there's a whole bunch of stories of the people meeting God at Mount Sinai. And so for the longest time, if they wanted to meet with God in the desert, they went to this mountain, right? And they go there, and in this instance, they get water from the rock, and their question is sort of answered for a second. But it seems like they never really trust it. And so they continue on through the desert, and eventually they get to this place called the Promised Land, and they settle there. And one of the first things they do is they build the temple. And so here's just a super rough sketch of the temple. And so there's all this stuff going on. You've got the outer courts where the Gentiles are allowed to be, the inner courts for the people of Israel, and then you've got court for just the men. And then you move closer and closer towards this thing called the Holy of Holies, if you can see that. And so they had this place in the temple really to answer this question, is God with us or not? Where is God? And they would go, right there. They built a location for God to be at so that when people come, well, where is your God? They would be like, he's right there. We have a building and a space. And you could see it a little bit. I think there's another slide that shows it better. But between the Holy of Holies, the place where God was, and the rest of the temple was this curtain. Because the idea was that God was so holy that if you actually came face to face with God, you would die. And so they made this massive curtain. Some estimates are that it was over 40 feet tall and over a foot thick, or around about a foot thick. So this massive curtain in order to keep people out, because if they saw God, they would die because God was too holy. And only one person was allowed to enter the Holy of Holies one time a year. That was the high priest. And on Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement, the high priest was able to go back there. And some people think they would tie a rope around him so that if he went in and if he saw God and died, they could pull him out with having somebody else having to go in and get him, right? So they have an answer to this question. So the question is like, where? Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? So they're still asking this question, is where is God? Is God with us or not? And now they've built this building and they said, there's God. And one person can go see him once a year. But then, a little bit later in history, this empire called the Babylonians comes in and they destroy Israel and they destroy the first temple. And it throws Israel back into this huge identity crisis and they go, we don't know where God is anymore. Does this God travel? Becomes the question, right? Or because the temple's destroyed, is he not with us anymore, right? Eventually, the Babylonians come out of power and the Israelites are allowed to go back and they build a second temple that's even bigger and better. It's Temple 2.0, and then later more gets added, Temple 2.1. Regardless, they're still asking this same question. Is God with us or not? And so that brings us to Jesus on the cross. And Jesus asks this really interesting question that I think is really similar, right? And so in just a second, I want to read a section of Mark 15. But before I do that, I want us to try to read it with fresh eyes. Whether you grew up in church or not, you probably know that as the story goes, Jesus is hung on a cross and dies and is resurrected 3 days later. But I want us to try to read it as if we don't know the ending, because I think that will open up some new things for us. And so we're going to read from Mark, and I want to try to figure out where's Mark leading us. So this is the first part. It says, at noon, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? When some of those standing near heard this, they said, listen, he's calling Elijah. Someone ran, filled a sponge with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes down to take him, he said. With a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus saw how he died, he said, surely this man was the Son of God. Now, can you go back to the first one? I want to address some of the stuff in there first. There's a lot in here. I'm not going to cover it all, but the first thing is Jesus asked this question. He says, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? That this is similar to the question that Israel has been asking for so long, which is, God, are you with us or not? Is the Lord with us? And in this moment, Jesus goes, it feels like God's not. This is a weird thing for Jesus to ask. If we believe Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus is going, God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you turned your back on me? Where are you? And so one of the questions people have asked for a long time is Jesus having a crisis of faith, right? Which is a problematic thing, right? I could feel you guys get uncomfortable when I just asked that, right? That's a weird thing. I think there's something else going on here, right? I think there's another way to look at it. So, my God, why have you forsaken me is actually a quote. And this, Jesus is quoting the very beginning of Psalm chapter 22. And the audience, most of the Israelite audience, would have known that. They would have known this psalm. They would have either had it memorized or where they've known generally what it said for the most part. And so it's almost like Jesus is like saying the first line of a song, and it would have called the rest of it to mind, right? So it says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it would have conjured Psalm 22. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a long psalm. But essentially what it is it's this cry of pain and agony, right? It's God, I'm broken. I'm beaten. My enemies have surrounded me. And then it's also mixed in with this cry for rescue, saying, God, this is my predicament. This is the place I find myself in, broken and suffering. please rescue me out of this. And so it would have conjured for the people this idea of brokenness and rescue because they would have known the psalm. The second sort of weird thing right after this is that the people think that he's calling Elijah. So listen, he's calling Elijah. And they wonder if Elijah will come and take Jesus off the cross. Now, Elijah was a prophet in the Old Testament. He was kind of one of the heroes of the Israelite faith. Everybody would have known who he was. They would have talked about him a lot. He would come up at festivals, all of this stuff. And so they've known who Elijah was. Now, one of the theories around this is Jesus said the word Eloi, Eloi. In the book of Matthew, it's actually Eli, Eli, which in this language is pretty similar to the name Elijah. And if you think about it, Jesus at this point is hanging on a cross, and he's probably close to suffocation. He's very close to death. And so one of the theories is that they misheard him, and they actually think he's calling on the name of Elijah. The other thing about it is what happens with Elijah is Elijah is one of the only characters in the Bible that never dies, right? When Elijah's time comes, he actually gets pulled up into heaven on this chariot, and there's all these fireworks, and it's this crazy scene. So if we put all of that together, my God, why have you forsaken? Psalm 22, it's this cry for rescue. They think he's calling for Elijah. They think he's going to get taken out of the cross. I think what Mark is doing here, if we think about this, is if we didn't know the story, if we're Mark's first audience, I think Mark is actually setting us up to think that God might come and take Jesus off the cross. And that's probably what we would want at this point, right? We've read this whole story. Jesus is the hero of that story. He's been captured by these religious and Roman officials, and he's been beaten and punished in the worst possible way the Romans could come up with. And now he's crying out for rescue and potentially invoking the name of Elijah. And what we want is for Jesus to take him off, is for God to take Jesus off the cross, right? But that's not the story we get. So if you go to the second part, Jesus breathed his last, and the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. So now a couple things about this curtain, right? The usual interpretation of this is it's talking about the curtain that separated everybody from the holies of holies. And the usual interpretation is that the curtain is torn, and the Spirit of God, which was in the Holy of Holies, was then released into the world, and now everybody has access to the Spirit of God. And I think that's an okay interpretation. I think that's fine. I like to think about it slightly differently. I like to think that the curtain is torn, and they looked in and realized it was just another room. That the people's attempts to place God in a single location had never worked in the first place. That this God was always among them. And then this curtain is torn and they realize, oh, we couldn't keep God in one place. God was among us the whole time. The other thing that I think might be going on with this curtain is I think it might have invoked ideas of grief and mourning for the people. So in Israelite culture, if someone close to you dies, the way that you grieve or mourn is you actually would take your clothes and rip them from top to bottom as a way of public grief. It was almost as if they were having their outside reflect how they felt on the inside. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced real loss, grief, mourning, but it really feels like something in you is tearing. And so the Israelite culture, they would actually tear their clothes to reflect this. And people would see that and know that they were in mourning and treat them different. And so I think when this curtain is torn, I wonder if this is actually God the Father grieving. If this is actually God the Father seeing his son on the cross who's been rejected by these people and has been put to death, and is actually grieving and mourning the loss of his son, and is so broken up by it that he tears his clothes. I wonder if. And then the last bit And there's this Roman centurion or a Roman soldier of sorts who stood there in front of Jesus, and seeing how he died, he said, "Surely this man is the Son of God." What I find really interesting is that this passage begins with the question, my God, why have you forsaken me? Another version of the question of, God, are you with me or not? Where are you? It feels like you've turned your back. And this place where they thought God was, this location, is suddenly empty. And then you have a Roman soldier pointing at a cross, a symbol of suffering, and saying, "There's God. Surely this is the Son of God." We're set up, it feels like Mark set us up to believe that this story was going to go a totally different way. It feels like Mark has set us up to think that God is going to come down in power and pull Jesus off the cross and end it. And instead, what we get is Jesus breathing his last, and we get a God that grieves and mourns and suffers with. I think what's happening here is the narrative is changing. A lot of times when we experience suffering, when we experience difficult, when we experience moments like the Israelites in the desert, we cry out to God and we go, "God, where are you?" And I think the problem is that our notion of God is that we have a God that is somewhere else watching us suffer. God is somewhere standing somewhere else watching us suffer. And we go, "God, how could you let this happen? Where are you? It doesn't feel like you're with me." And instead, we get a story of a God that is grieving and mourning and suffering. This is a God that is right here next to you going, "I am grieving alongside you. I'm actually so close that I can wipe your tears away. And I'm doing this with you. I'm not a God that you can contain somewhere in a building. I'm not a God somewhere else. I'm right here with you, suffering alongside you." So I want to tell you one story, and then I just close with an invitation. Last fall, I got to go to India. And while we were in India, one of the last days we were there, we took a train from Agra, and we were going to go back to the capital. And before we got to the train station, the people that were leading us said, "Hey, just so you guys are aware, there's probably going to be a lot of homeless people at this train station. And for your own safety, you should keep your things close and just kind of keep your head down, keep moving, and we're going to get to our train as fast as we possibly can." And we'd been in a lot of cities, so we'd encountered a lot of homeless people at that point. But we get to the train station, and we get off the bus, and we're immediately surrounded by this group of homeless kids. And there's something particularly heartbreaking about homeless kids. It forces you to be acutely aware of the brokenness of the world in kind of a new way. And I remember being filled with this sense of helplessness because you want to do something, right? You want to fix it. You want to make it go away. But there's not a whole lot you can do because the problem is, it's a big problem. It's systematic, and there's not a whole lot you can do. But I did what I was told. I kept my stuff close, kept my head down, started walking, and we get to the place where our train's supposed to be, and it's not there yet. And these kids had followed us through the train station because they knew we were travelers and that we probably had money. And so we sit down, and the kids follow us, surround us, and I'm sitting there. And I had this moment where it was like God tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Wake up. I have something for you here. Don't miss this moment." And so I look up and I make eye contact with this little girl. And she's probably 8 or 9 years old. And she had her little sister on her hip. And you know, nothing crazy happens. I'm not like the hero of this story by any means. But I learned her name as best I could. and told her mine. And then another kid had a toy. He brought that over. We played for a second. And we just hung out for a minute. And then train came. I said goodbye. I got on it, and we left. But I'll never forget that moment where I looked that girl in the eye. Because, and this is a mystery I can't quite explain, but I saw Jesus there, I think, more clearly than I have up until this point in my life. I saw something new. I learned something new about God from that girl. It was as if the image of God that was planted in her just shone through so clearly to me that day. And I can't forget it. I can't seem to forget it. And the thing I remember the most is that God woke me up and said, "Don't miss this. I have something for you." And so my invitation this morning is this, is if you have experienced some type of suffering, or if you are, you inevitably will. My invitation is to look it in the eye. I think as humans, our natural desire is to avoid, to try to go around, or to try to get through the difficulties as quickly as possible, to just kind of keep our head down and go through. But I think if we're able to look our difficulties in the eye, I think you might see Jesus. I think God might have something for you there, because we have a God that changes the narrative. The narrative isn't that God comes down in power and just pulls Jesus off the cross, but the narrative is that this is a God that is right there with us, suffering and grieving and mourning. And so the answer to the question of is God with us or not is absolutely yes. And if you want to see it, sometimes we have to look at the hard stuff. We have to be the Roman soldier who's looking at the cross going, "There's the Son of God. That's where the good stuff is." And the beautiful thing, I think I'm really excited for Wally to share, is that Sunday's coming. And Easter is right around the corner. And my invitation is, don't skip Friday and Saturday, because resurrection is right on the other side, and it's absolutely beautiful. But for a moment, let's sit in Friday and Saturday. So let me pray, and then I think more stuff. Yeah? Let me pray. Cool. Let me pray. Hey, God, thanks for today. Thank you for gathering us, for this group of people. God, for the stories that are coming out of Walker about how these people are impacting their community and just the love that they're spreading. God, thanks for the privilege of letting me be here with them today. And God, I pray that whatever it is that we're dealing with today, whatever we're walking in with, God, that you would remind us that you're with us. You're sitting right next to us. You're so close that sometimes it's hard to see. And God, that if we would just look whatever we're facing in the eye, that we might actually see you more clearly. And God, thank you for the promise of Sunday, for the promise of resurrection, for the promise of new life and new creation. In your name we pray. Amen.